All right, we're starting here on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, two lines down. Amar Rav Gidol Marav, Shlosha b'chamesh asurim, b'sheva mutarim. It can turn out that you can have three people classified as a shayara, that within chamesh, whether it's chamesh beitza'ah or chamesh sa'im, it could be either way, the interpretation, and they'd still be asur, it wouldn't work out. B'sheva mutarim. But then in another instance, they can have seven sa'ah or seven beit sa'ah and be mutarim. Amrulei, Amarav, Hachi Amarlu. So he says, Amrulei, Amarav Hachi. He said, did Rav really say that? Amarlu. Oraita, Nivyei, Viktivei, Damarav Hachi. It's basically a Lashon Shvuah. Torah, Nivyim, Viktuvim. Taking a Shvuah on the Tanakh. Damarav Hachi, then Rav definitely said this. Amravashi, my Kushya. What's the problem here? Dilma Hachi Kamar. Maybe this is the understanding of what Rav said. Hutzruchu the sheish v'ikifu b'sheva. If they needed six, and end up enclosing seven, afilu b'sheva mutarim, then you don't have a problem. Because they needed the six, they have one in excess, one sa'ah in excess, and therefore it's mutar, because we said up to a beit sa'ah in excess is mutar. Lo hutzruchu ala chamesh. If they only needed five, v'kifu b'sheva, and then they enclosed seven, afilu b'chamesh asurim. Then even the five that they enclosed are problematic, because now they have excess space of tusa'ah, and excess space of beit sa'ataim, of panui, creates a problem. So here, even though you end up with a larger place enclosed, and that's asur, smaller place enclosed, and that's mutar, it has to do with the relationship between the needs and the size of the area. If the needs fill the size of the area, then you're fine, even if it's a larger area. If they don't need the large area, and they're still enclosing a large area, then that is problematic. The Gra has a slightly different girsa here about whether they were needed chamesh, and then they were needed shalosha, and they kifu chamesh. She changes the girsa to three and five instead of five and seven over here. V'ha'adiktani. U'bavaj lo yeh beit sataim panui. So that when we say or make that statement that you have to have no more than Beit Sataim, that is left empty. Beit Sataim, again, is the size of the Chatzer HaMishkan, which was 100 by 50 amot, which is 5,000 square amot. So if that area is left unused or unutilized, then it's a problem. My love, how do you explain unutilized? Is it Panui Mi Adam? Is that there's nobody living there? Lo, panui mi kelim, it means that they have no kelim there. The habamina would be panui mi adam. Panui adam would mean that each individual is entitled to a beit sataim. Each individual. So therefore, if I have three individuals, they're entitled to six sa'ah. And then the seventh sa'ah that we had before is not in excess because it was one sa'ah above the needs of those individuals. That's one way to frame it. Or the other way to frame it is, it has nothing to do with the individuals, it has to do with their items, their possessions. And it's not that you're limited to beit sataim per individual, but simply by the needs of the individual, based on what their possessions are and what they have there.
But would it still be
individually, or it's collectively? Yeah, cumulatively, if they use up all that space, then it's fine, as long as they don't have an excess of the needs of their kelim and their living, then you're fine. But it's not then governed by each individual getting a beit sataim.
So it would be collective.
Yeah.
It's beit sataim total.
No, it would be beit sataim. No, no.
It's still the six.
Yeah, still the six. I mean, no, they get more than six. They get as much as they want. But the question is that, is it determined by, when we say panui mi adam, means that if you have three people, then if you have a beit sataim left over, it's because three people only need beit sataim. And then the beit sataim left over is panui. Or do we say that panui mikelim means that beit sataim has nothing to do with how many people you have there. It has to do with the number of people plus the possessions. As long as they can fill out the space, then we don't worry about it. So therefore, even if they are three individuals and they utilize less than the six sa'ah, if you went by individuals, you would say six sa'ah automatically is no problem. And then even if they didn't use, they only used four of them or three of them, then it wouldn't be a problem. The answer is no. It's kelim are the determining factor. And therefore, both to the upside and the downside. Even if you have three people, you can have less than six sa'ah or, three beit sataim. And you could also have more than three beits at a time, because it has nothing to do with how many people, but it has to do with the amount of possessions or what they need.
So theoretically, they could sprinkle.
Yes. Itmar, shlosha umeit echad mehem. They started out Shabbat, and there were three of them. They got through the middle of Shabbat, and now there are only two of them. Shnayim v'nitosfu alehem. They started with two, and then somebody joined them. Does that change the status of the area in the middle of Shabbat? Rav Huna v'Rav Yitzchak have a machlok between Rav Huna v'Rav Yitzchak. Chadamar Shabbat goremet. One of them says that Shabbat is the determining factor. It means upon the entry of Shabbat, whatever is in place, that remains. V'chadamar diurim gormim. The other one says that it depends on the number of people there. Depending on the number of people, that means if someone disappeared on Shabbat, then that would create a problem, and you'd reduce the amount of the area. Someone was added on Shabbat, that would increase the amount of the area. Tistayim, the Rav Huna who, the Amar. Let us at least conclude that Rav Huna is the one who puts forth the opinion that Shabbat goremet. That Shabbat is the causal effect, causal item over here, which is that Shabbat determines whether it's on or it's off. Amar Rabba. Bayi mi Rav Huna, ubayi mi Rav Yehuda. I asked the Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, Irev derach petach v'nistama petach. They made an Eruv through the petach, and then the petach was sealed off, closed off for whatever reason. Derach halon v'nistama halon. They did it through the window, and then the window got closed up. Here we're talking about two chatzerot, adjacent chatzerot, that have a door between them or a window between them that has the minimum requirements of a door of a window, so that they are classified as a door and a window. Because they have this door window between them, it allows them to become a singular entity. So if they made an Eruv between the two chatzerot, and where do they put the Eruv? They put it right in the doorway. So they put the Eruv in the doorway, and they were ma'arev between the two chatzerot, so they could carry back and forth between the chatzerot. All of a sudden, part of the wall collapses, or you have some sort of mudslide, something happens and blocks the doorway. So there's no longer the doorway between them where the Eruv sits between them. What's the status at that point? Same thing with the window, because the Eruv's there, and now it's been blocked up, whatever created the Eruv. V'amali, Shabbat, v'hoyol v'hutra, hutra. And he said back to me that since Shabbat already made it mutar, once it's mutar, that doesn't change after the fact. So the question was posed to Rav Huna. And Rav Huna's response was that hold v'hutra, hutra. So therefore, that sounds like Rav Huna's position would be that Shabbat is the determining factor over here, and not the number of people that are living there, because over here he has another case where he shows you that once it's mutar on Shabbat, we don't take away that heter. So tistayim, let's conclude at least that that's Rav Huna. Leimer Rav Huna Rav Yitzvah v'pukta Rav Yosi Rav Yehuda kamiflegei. Let us suggest that Rav Huna and Rav Yitzvah are arguing in a different machloket tanaim that we have, which is the Tanan. You have a Mishnah later on. Chatzer, shenifritza, mishtei ruchuta. You have a chatzer that originally is enclosed, and then, it over Shabbat, two of the walls fell down. Chen bayit, shenifritza, mishtei ruchuta, very a house. And over the Shabbat, two of the walls fall down. Chen mavoi, shenit lu, korotav, olechiav. Or you have a mavoi whose korotav, olechiav, were taken. And Rashi, Tosafot knows that Rashi has a girsa of korah and lechi, because it's not necessary to have korotav and lechiyav. You could say korotav in general or lechiyav in general. There is another reason. There's a sheet that Rabbi Yehuda who thinks you need both. But Tosafot says he thinks Rashi's right, that the girsha should be korah and lechi. Mutarim l'oto Shabbat. Then for that Shabbat, they continue to be mutar. Ve'asurim le'atid davon. But in the future, they're not going to be mutar. You can finish out that Shabbat. That Shabbat began with heter. Therefore, you can complete it be'heter. Next week when you show up, you can't just say, okay, well, last week was mutar, so this week it is mutar. You have to rectify the situation. That's Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Yosi Omer, mutarim l'oto Shabbat, mutarim l'atidavo. You can use it that Shabbat, you can use it in the future. Masarim l'atidavo, if you can't use it in the future, how can you use it then asarim l'oto Shabbat? Then you would also be asur on that Shabbat. There says that Rabbi Yosi is notably isur. He's not coming to say that it should be mutar in both cases. He's coming to say it should be asur in both cases. If it can't work in the future, it should not be able to work on that Shabbat. So let us say that this is the same machloket. Rav Yehuda and Rav Yosi, so you have something that changes. There is something that changes within the mavui, the chatzer, the house over Shabbat. Does the status of that area change as well? Rav Yehuda says no. It remains in place as if Shabbat goremet. that once you enter in the Shabbat and a certain status is bestowed on an area, that remains throughout the Shabbat. Rabbi Yossi says, no, if next week you can't use it, that means now that the status has changed, you can't use it as well. So let's align the positions. Let's say Rav Huna and Rabbi Yehuda have the same position, because Rav Huna and Rabbi Yehuda both believe that Shabbat is Goremet. And let us say that Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Yossi have the same opinion, which Rabbi Yitzchak says it's Diurim. And over here, Rabbi Yossi says that it's the Mechitzot that are Goreim. There's something besides the Shabbat that is causing the thing to be Mutar. If they disappear, then they are Asur. That's what the Gemara says. Leimer Rav Huna, Damark Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yitzchak, Damark Rabbi Yossi. So Amar Lecha Rav Huna, Ana Damrei Afilu Rabbi Yossi. I can even fit my position into Rabbi Yossi. Ad Gam Lo Kamar Rabbi Yossi Hotom, El Delet Noon LeMechitzot. Over there, by Rabbi Yossi's situation, the structural nature of the item has changed. You've lost the Mechitzot. So that's why Rabbi Yossi says it's no longer good, because the Mechitzot are gone. Hacha Yit Noon LeMechitzot. In our case here, the Mechitzot are still intact. We just lost one of the people that was staying there. So we lost one of the people that's staying there. That's not a change in the Mechitzot. That's not a change in the status of the area. That has to do with when we start out with the number of people, what we're granted in terms of permission to surround or enclose. But the enclosure is intact. So I could agree even with Rabbi Yossi. I could say Rabbi Yossi over there thinks problematic because the Mechitzot dropped off. And over here thinks it's fine because Mechitzot are still intact. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, Ana Damrei Afilu Rabbi Yehuda. I can even fit into position Rabbi Yehuda. I can't look at Rabbi Yehuda Atam El Deitnu El Diurim. The reason Rabbi Yehuda over there says everything's fine is because everybody who's living there is still living there. Nothing changed. The inanimate objects changed. But anybody who is living there is still living there. So their status didn't change. That's why he leaves it intact. Hachu Let Noel Diurim. Now, in our case, yeah, the Mechitzot are intact, but the people are not intact. And so something's changed in the status. So they reject this understanding that the Machloket Tanaim is necessarily parallel. And therefore, they say we can fit in. These Amoraim can fit into either one of the Tanaim. As Tosafot points out, the Halacha Rav Huna. The Halacha is, like Rav Huna, that Shabbat is Goremet. But we also pass an Halacha Rav Yossi, that if the Mechitzot fall down, then that is problematic. So that you can pass in that way because of the way that we just structured the Gemara, that you can believe in one case, Shabbat Goremet, and the other case, that it's problematic, exactly along the lines of what Rav Huna suggests over here. Rav Huna says, if it's mutar the Shabbat, it remains mutar for the Shabbat, but if the mechitzot disappear, then you have a problem. If the walls fall down, and you no longer have the mechitzot there, then you have something that is a bigger issue, and that we cannot clear on Shabbat, and that will be problematic on Shabbat. Right, so now the Gemara continues with the last part of the Mishnah, which is, V'chamim amrim echad mishnei dvarim. We had in the Mishnah the position of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, who said that the only real fence is something that has both horizontal and vertical pieces to it. Otherwise, it's not called a fence. Then the Chachamim come along and say, Osheti o erev, echad mishnei dvarim. You can do one of two. So Gemara asks, and V'chamim amrim echad mishnei dvarim, Hainu Tanakama. How are they different than the Tanakama? Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is arguing on the Tanakama, who already suggested that you could use either ropes going across in Erev, or Sheti, or the poles standing up. Then Rabbi Yossi says, no, you need both. And then the Chachamim come back and say, you only need one. So how are they differentiated from the Tanakama? They're saying the same thing as the Tanakama. Ikubayinayu yachid biyishuv. Difference between them is whether when a person is in, we'll call it a civilized area, they're in a developed area. Is this heter for Sheti and Erev independently only used out in the shetach, out in the field, when you're caught in a difficult situation? You're traveling and you're caught in that difficult situation. So in that situation, the Chachamim were matir you to use the Sheti and Erev. And not like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says that you need both of them, but you can use either one of them independently. Even a Yachid can use either one of them. Because we saw yesterday that even Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda agrees that Sheti and Erev work up to a limited amount. They work up to Beit Satayim. The question is the Chol Tzarchan, whether you can have beyond that. And that, even the Chachamim say, even by Yachid, you can do the Chol Tzarcho. So the Chachamim believe that the Chol Tzarcho, but when you're out in the Shetach, question is, now what happens if you're at home? You're at home in your house, and you want to put up a fence that's made out of Sheti, Erev, does that work? So that'll be the difference between the Chachamim and the Tanakama. And when the Chachamim, or the Rabbanan over here, say, Echad Mishnei Devarim, O Sheti, O Erev, that's a Mechitza, It doesn't matter if you're traveling, it doesn't matter if you're at home, it doesn't matter if you're yochid, it doesn't mean if you're a rabbi. The Rabbanan at the tail end of the Mishnah believe that this is a dispensation where you can have this be a fence no matter where you are. Even in normal situations, it can act as a fence to shet the neret. But the Tanakhama believes, yes, it is a fence for a yachid, but that's only in these unusual circumstances that he gets caught in his journey, gets caught on the road, and he's got to encamp. And when he's got to encamp, he's got to make a makeshift fence. That makeshift fence can be made out of sheti or erev. He's living at home. He wants to put up a fence around his yard. He can't put up a fence of sheti or erev. That's not sufficient. They would agree to Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Yehuda in that case. All right, next Mishnah. Arba'a dvarim patruo b'machaneh. There are four things that were exempted when you were out in a camp. The camp here means military camp. You're out on the field, and the military is in the field. We drop certain requirements of the troops because of the situation in which they find themselves. None of them is mivim etzim mikol makom. They're allowed to bring wood from wherever they want. Wherever they want means even if other people's fields that are found out there, they can exert, in a sense, eminent domain, and they can take the wood that they need for the encampment for the army that's there. It's not gezel. It's not a problem of gezel. Not yet. No, no. Turim merchitzat yadayim. They're allowed. They don't have to wash their hands. Omi demai. They're allowed to eat demai without taking off trumot and masrot. Umel arev, and they don't have to make an eruv. Gemara will discuss each one of these. Tana banan. Machane yotzei de milchamet rishut mutarim gezel etzim yaveshim. A troop. A group of soldiers that's going out to battle, but what type of battle we're talking about here is a mechamet rishut. Mechamet rishut means a milchama that is not obligated by the Torah, and it's a decision that they made, a military decision for whatever reason that they're going out to battle, but not something that necessarily is what we call mechamet mitzvah, something that God commanded us to do. Rashi over here, it's very interesting, Rashi. It's not really our sugya. The Gemara has the sugya in Sanhedrin, and that's really the sugya about determining what's called mechamet mitzvah. And what's called Mechamed Rishut. Rashi over here says, Stam Mechamed Rishut. Most Milchamot, all battles, are generally Rishut. Mechamed Yeshua Beilech. From after the battle of Yeshua and onwards, they're always Mechamed Rishut. Shehi Aitam Mechamed Mitzvah. That's a real Mechamed Mitzvah, because they were commanded to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And in conquering Eretz Yisrael, they are performing a Mechamed Mitzvah. From that point forward, almost all Milchamot, or he says, the general Milchamah is Mechamed Rishut. It's a very narrow definition of Mechamet Mitzvah. And it's interesting because the Gemara in Sanhedrin seems to be, most of the Rishonim in Sanhedrin have the more expansive view of this. A defensive battle is also considered to be a Mechamet Mitzvah. One has to defend the city. One is being attacked. It's also a Mechamet Mitzvah. As well as the Gemara there has different opinions, as well as the Rishonim as to what other things might be included in Mechamet Mitzvah. But it's not as narrow as just simply being the conquering of the land the first time by Yoshua. But nevertheless, the Gemara is saying here that this is not limited to Mechamet Mitzvah. This even includes Mechamet Rishut, when you're going out to battle, whether it's for conquering additional land, for, in their day, many times it meant the acquisition of possessions. You went to battle if you needed more gold, more food. We saw that in the Gemara in Brachot, when David HaMelech says that they didn't have sufficient supplies for the people. So they went out to war, so that they can conquer more land and have more in the way of raw materials and resources. But Mechamet Rishut, you go to battle. Mutarim Gezel Etzim Yaveshim. You can go and take dry wood. Now the Chiddush here is dry wood because certainly you could take moist wood because that wasn't already designated for firewood. But dry wood. And dry wood that's even found in people's yards, in people's fields. You can go and take that and you can confiscate it and use it for the troops that are there. Yehuda ben Tema Omer, Af Chonim Bechol Makom. Not only do they have the right to confiscate the firewood, they also have a right to pitch tent whenever they need to. They can set up camp in your property. Again, some sort of exercise of eminent domain where the government can come in and take over the property. Umakom shneragu shamnik varim. And the last thing that they get is wherever they're killed in the battle, they are buried on the spot and they acquire that. So even though it's in the middle of someone else's field, then they get killed there. You can bury them right there, and that becomes a kever, even though that makes it difficult for this person who owns the field later on. Nevertheless, they have that right to be buried there. Right, the round it will be problematic. So mutarim begezleitzim yeveshim. So now the Gemara is going to discuss each one of these items. So that they are mutar to take this dry wood. So when it says, why do you need the Mishnah? I takanta de Yoshua avo. That was already amongst the takanot of Yoshua. The Gemara in Baba Kama discusses that Yoshua put in place 10 takanot. Basically things that involved civil law. But they were to make it possible for people to live in a social situation. So he put into effect certain things so that people could live together, even though they weren't the letter of the law, but it made sense in order to have good neighbors and to be able to live in a single area as a community. So some of them are, and Mari is going to list two of them to get to the one that we want. What is Marin Bechorshin? That people can graze their animals in forests. Even though they are private forests, they're allowed to graze their animals in their area, because even though they're not owned by these people, and it's not public property. Nevertheless, since people own a forest, don't own the forest for the vegetation that's on the floor of the forest, they shouldn't mind that other people come in and graze their animals in the forest. So because of that, to make it possible for people to graze their animals and have space to graze their animals, Yeshua granted people permission that in areas that are forests, that are not otherwise private fields, that are planted specifically for their vegetation, that people can graze their animals in those locations. You're allowed to collect wood from people's fields. If you have twigs and branches that are left on people's fields, you can go in there and collect those items and use them for their own firewood. So here you see that it has nothing to do with troops. It has nothing to do with the army. Anybody can go in and take the firewood that they need. So here the Gemara gives three answers. One is, Hatam bihizmi bihigi. Over there we're talking about thorn bushes and low-growing brush. Stuff that's not like tree branches. They more simple stuff that most people wouldn't use, and that's why you're allowed to take it. Over here by the army, Hoka Bishar Eitzim. We're talking about real wood and real tree branches. Inami, here's a second possibility of differentiation. Hatam bimichubarim, Hoka bitlushim. Over there, it's only when it's still attached to the ground. The person didn't specifically pick it or cut it for firewood yet. But over here by the army, even if they've cut it for firewood and they have a firewood pile there, you can still take it and you can still confiscate it. Or another distinction is, inami otam belachim acha biyveshim. Over there, you can only take moist items, which have not yet been designated for firewood because they are moist. So you can take them and dry them out and use them. Whereas over here by the army, they can even take stuff that you've taken out and it's dried out. You can take that or confiscate it. So whatever the heter is by Yoshua's takana, the troops get something in excess of that. They get more than that. And that's the difference. So that's why we have a separate heter from the takanot of Yoshua. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema omer, af chunim b'chol makom, o makom shnei haragim sham nikvarim. So that Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema adds on that they can encamp in any place they want. O makom shnei haragim, in a place that they're killed, sham nikvarim. There they are buried. Pshita. Why is it in the question here? Meit mitzvah. There is a meit mitzvah. Here's someone who dies on the spot, and you have to take care of them. Someone has to handle the body. A meit mitzvah is kone mikomo. We have a din that a meit mitzvah is kone the place where he dies. And then he can be buried wherever he dies. You can bury them on the spot, even though that spot happens to be private property. So lo tzricha. No, here's the case. By the troops, it's different. Afa gav de'itei kovrin. It says, even if he has people who can bury, even though he has people who can bury him. Meaning that kvura, Or the meit mitzvah, or the definition of a meit mitzvah, which you're going to see here, is the Tanya, izu meit mitzvah, koshein lo kuvrim. Meit mitzvah is someone who doesn't have someone to take care of the body, someone to take care of the needs of the mate, to bury them, and to ensure that they come to proper burial. So usually that is your shim, or someone who's a relative of the mate. So meit mitzvah is when you bump into a body, and there's nobody there to take care of the body. The other part of the definition is, kore ve'echarim onim, if he calls out and other people answer, that's not a meit mitzvah. But a meit mitzvah is someone where you call and there's nobody else around to deal with it. So you have two conditions here. One is that the mate doesn't have your shim who would engage or get involved to ensure the burial of this individual. And number two is it's in a situation where the mate is isolated in some way that nobody's going to handle the mate. Here, you're the only one present and the only one who can deal with the issue. Now, the reason for this is because we even allow a kohen to become tamei. We allow a nazir to become tamei. We're only give them that dispensation when we're in a situation where there's no one else to deal with it. If someone else can deal with it, we'll opt to have the other person deal with it rather than be mitamei a kohen or mitamei the nazir. So the definition of meit mitzvah revolves around this issue of being both isolated or no one else to handle the situation, but from two sides. One is that there are no relatives, and number two is there's nobody present. There's nobody in the area where you find yourself. So if that's the case, then this isn't a real case of make mitzvah. And a make mitzvah is a kone mekomo. Now, make mitzvah is kone mekomo, but that's when he's a make mitzvah. Over here, this when the army or the troops that are there, they're not necessarily a make mitzvah. Who says they don't have any relatives to handle them? Who says there's nobody else there to deal with them? Now, it might be that in battle, there could be situations where that is true, that it is a make mitzvah, and it's not so simple, and you might have to bury the mate there on the spot. But there are situations where he wouldn't be a make mitzvah, and despite the fact that he's not a make mitzvah, nevertheless, you're allowed to bury him. He's kone mekomo. And so that's what it means in excess of a make mitzvah, that the troops, if they die in battle, they're allowed to be buried in that spot, despite the fact that they're not a make mitzvah. Vatanyo. Oh, so now the Gemara says, a make mitzvah kone mekomo. Is it really true that a make mitzvah is kone the place where they die? Vatanyo, we have a braita. A motzi mate mutal besratio. A person finds a mate who's laying across the main thoroughfare. Fineolu yami moves him over to the right. Asratio on the right side of the road. Olu small asratio on the left side of the road. Stebur ustenir. If the two sides of the main thoroughfare, one side is a fallow field and the other side is a plowed field. Fineolu stebur. Then obviously you should choose to bury him in the side that is fallow. Stay near, but stay zero. If you have one field that is plowed and the other one that is planted, Fineolus, stay near. Put them into one that's plowed and not planted. Hayush, Shteim, Nirot, if they're both plowed. Shteim, Zruot, are both planted. Shteim, Burot, are both of them fallow. Fineolus, Choruch, Shirtze, you can pick whichever side and you can move him. But the point of the bright, or the question from the bright is, you're moving him. If a make mitzvah is Koneh Mekomo, then why are you moving him? Just bury him on the spot. Here we're talking about a mate that's laying on the border. He's sitting between two areas, and you have permission to move him. Why do you have permission to move him? Because he's sitting on a main thoroughfare. Since the mate is on a main thoroughfare, you don't want to leave him there because you're going to cause a huge takoa. Kohanim, anybody who's traveling there over that area has become tame mate. We're not going to allow you to leave the mate there. You have permission to move the mate already. Once you have permission to move the mate, and you're sitting on a border between two fields, then you could pick which way you want to go. Then we don't say kana mikomo, because you're already moving them. It's the equivalent of, once you're allowed to, for instance, pick up muksa on Shabbat, once you have it in your hand, you can put it down wherever you want. Because once you have permission to pick it up, then you have the right to dispose of it, or put it down, or place it wherever you want. We don't say you like, drop it as soon as possible. The something over here. Once you have the mate and you're allowed to move the mate, he's not going to be koneh at the exact makom where he's laying. Then already, once you have permission to move him to whichever side makes sense, or move him to a place that you want in order to remove any difficulty they've been caused by having been buried in the middle of the road. Right? One of the things mentioned in the Mishnah is that they do not have to wash their hands. Amravai lo shanu ela maim rishonim. Says that's only mayim before the meal, mayim mishonim to wash for a motzi. For mayim achronim chuva, mayim achronim is definitive. You must do mayim achronim. That's the opposite of today. Today nobody will eat without mayim mishonim, and everybody benches without mayim achronim. The question is why. But here the Gemara says it's for certain that mayim mishonim we could probably drop. That's only an institution the rabbonon, and we could drop that. But mayim achronim is a chuva, is an absolute obligation. Why are they an absolute obligation? There is this salt from Sdom, the Dead Sea salt, that is mesameh et ha'einayim, that blinds the individual, that causes real serious issues. Now there's a lot involved in this. So that even when you have a core worth of salt, there's only a very, very small amount, a quartus, like a granule worth in that large quantity. So it's not all melech stomit that does this. There's a limited quantity within a core of melech stomit, but there's always that chance that you hit that little piece, and therefore the risk is not worth it. Amrale. Right. It's a granule, right? They use it by the Levona and the Ktoret, right? Koret. Amalei Ravacha Brei Derova, the Ravashi, Kayo Milcha Mai. If he's counting salt, measuring out salt, he's not eating, but counting out, he's working with the salt, what's the din? Amalei, halo mi baye. That you don't have to ask. What does that mean? All right, so Rashi seems to have a different girsa in our Gemara, and he says, kol shekein ditzarech. Rashi seems to have a different girsa, which means certainly there, it's not even a question, not a question that you have to wash your hands because you're engaged with the soch. Right, you're always moving it around. Now here, Rashi makes this interesting comment about the salt, which is based on the Gemara in Brachot, which is, achar kol achilatcha achol melech. Number one is that after all of your meals, you should eat salt. That's the finishing touch of the meal. And mushum melach shetaval bo etzba'o. And since he dips his hand into the salt, therefore they were tiknu mayim achronim. They put mayim achronim in place. So now here are the factors that we have to adjust for. Which is number one, it's clear that they ate with their hands. They don't have utensils. Right? The fork and the knife don't come in until significantly later. So all their eating is done by their hands. That's number one. Number two is they have this practice of putting their hands into salt and eating that salt at the end of the meal. So based on that, you could suggest that if either one of those is missing, then mayim achronim wouldn't be a chovah anymore. Because, number one, you don't eat with your hands, you're eating with utensils. And number two is we don't dip our hands in salt. We don't put salt as part of an integral part of the meal or at the end of the meal. So that's the last thing, which is Tosafot mentions over here. Which is that maybe there is no melech stomit anymore. I mean that we don't have this melech stomit. We don't have any salt that is, quote unquote, eye blinding when you touch it to your eyes. Might hurt for a little bit, but it doesn't make you blind. It doesn't have permanent impact on you. So if that's the case, Tosfot says, and you can read it right here, Tosfot says, Akshav lo enagu b'mayim achronim. Reason today that we don't have the melech to do mayim achronim. Dein melech stomit matzui b'neinu. They don't have melech stomit. Maybe they'll be different because they do have melech stomit around. Again, it doesn't seem to have the impact that they had in the day. Inami, another reason is, because we don't, at the end of the meal, we don't dip our fingers in salt. Now, time at Tosafot, they're still eating with their hands, but salt, they're not dipping their hands in salt. That is Tosafot's opinion here, and there are some other Rishonim that follow the position of Tosafot. The Mayim Achronim is no longer an issue because the reasons for Mayim Achronim have disappeared for one of many here. We say either there's no melech stomit, we don't eat with our hands, or they don't dip their hands in salt at the end of the meal. There is another slew of Rishonim who believe that Mayim Achronim is still a chovah for a different reason. The different reason is that just like when you go to daven, you have to wash your hands, and you wash your hands as preparation for davening, benching is no different. Benching might be one of the few brachot that's de'oraita, min ha-Torah. And if you're going to bench, then you should wash your hands beforehand. Not because you have to wash them for melech stomit, you should wash them because you have to daven. You're going to say a bracha. When you're going to say a bracha, you have to wash your hands before you say a bracha. Prepare for your tefillah. Prepare to be before a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that's another slew of Rishonim who believe that it's mayim achronim is still chovah. Not because of the melech stomit, but because of this other reason of being prepared to bench. Cleaning your hands to be ready for benching. There is a middle group of Rishonim, and this is Tosfot included, not here, but Tosfot in other places, which is that if one's hands are dirty, then Mayim Achronim would be a chovah. If a person would otherwise wash their hands after the meal, right, so here they're going to go, they can finish their meal, they bench, and then they go wash their hands. So if you're going to wash your hands anyway because you feel that they're dirty, then you should wash them before benching. Then you should do Mayim Achronim beforehand. If you don't feel that your hands are dirty, you're not going to wash them after the meal anyway, then Mayim Achronim wouldn't be applicable. So you have three basic groups of Rishonim that deal with it. There is a last group of Rishonim that say nothing's changed. That we don't know. We don't know what the reason was originally. Here Chazal mentioned one. Either there is melech stomit and we don't know about it, or the reasons behind the washing, we don't understand all the metaphysical reasons, and therefore it all remains intact. Which is that nothing's changed. That includes the Gra, the Marshal, and the others, Rishonim Achronim, that have this position, which everything stays the same. Nothing's changed. So based on that, you have these groups of Rishonim. What does the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramos say? So Shulchan Aruch brings down that it's a chovah up front. Then he does later on bring the Shittat Tosafot. But then the Mishnah Berurah qualifies the Shittat Tosafot again, that if your hands are dirty, then one certainly should wash. And the Mishnah Berurah then quotes all of those Rishonim Achronim that believe that Mayim Achronim is still a chovah. And the Ramah is in the same mindset that Mayim Achronim is a chovah, and that one should wash Mayim Achronim today. That it hasn't disappeared and it hasn't changed. And especially in Eretz Yisrael, for those that follow the Minhag Gra, the Gra is adamant about the fact that the Mayim Achronim are still intact and that one should wash after the meal. Again, not even for perspective of Melech Stomit, one should wash their hands, because most people, after they finish a meal, will wipe their hands, wash their hands, or clean themselves off. If you're going to do that anyway, then you should do it before you bench, because at least then you are killing two birds with one stone. You're cleaning your hands, but you're also preparing to bench. That's a nice thing. Just to note, this is something, I don't know where it came from, but there's no real basis for it. There is no difference between women and men with regards to Mayim Achronim. Mayim Achronim has no distinction. There's no reason to distinguish between them. And if Mayim Achronim is a chovah, it's a chovah for the men and the women, not just for the men. The last thing to note here. Yes, right, so that's a very good question. Chovah is different. I was just about to speak about the difference between chovah and mitzvah, which is that chovah, and here the Gemara, the Rishonim deal with this in other contexts. For instance, like Ner Shabbat chovah. That having a Ner on Shabbat is chovah. The Geonim and others say that by Mayim Achronim we don't make a bracha. We don't make a bracha on it because it's a chovah and not a mitzvah. So some of them want to extrapolate that and say by Ner Shabbat, you also have camp. How can you say make a bracha by Ner Shabbat? It's a chovah, not a mitzvah. So the Rishonim deal with trying to make distinctions between different types of chovot. But yes, chovah is different than a mitzvah. Chovah is obligatory. Obligatory in the sense that it has a context or there's an overarching need beyond what the Torah commanded. It's not because the Torah commanded, you would do this anyway. And the Gemara in many places says this line, which is, Sakanta chamira mi mitzvah. That, or mi isura. That danger is more problematic or something that we have to take much more care about than even a isur. So for instance, with things like my migulim, that's where the Gemara says in that context, water that was left open overnight. That's an issue of danger. So there, an issue of danger, we don't say batal barov, we don't imply all those principles that apply to isur. By isur, you say batal barov, and you're willing, you can eat it, then it's no problem. By isur, by sakanta, we're not going to say that because there's risk to life. And same thing here, by Mayim Achronim. Is it Mayim Achronim Chuvah? Here, the obligation is that there's risk to limb over here, that you could lose eyesight. And therefore, we don't have dispensations and we don't have other things. We generally don't allow people to walk away from this and say, I don't want to, I don't have to. It's Chuvah. It's an obligation. It's not a mitzvah. So Chuvah stands at a higher level than mitzvah. But then also, because of that, it doesn't get a bracha. It doesn't have other of the trappings that come with a mitzvah, because it's not a mitzvah, it's a chovah, it's an obligation for one to take care of themselves and to protect their life and limb.
So in that case, then the nafkamina would be considered that malchus is still around or not.
Right, so that's again, some of the Rishonim will believe that it meant, like the Rambam says, maybe Rambam says it this way, maybe we have salts that have the same properties of malchus domit and we don't know it. So therefore, you have to do Mayim Achronim. That's the way the Rambam formulates it. So the Alan says you still have to do it, even though Melech Stomit is not around anymore. But you're right, because of that, you would continue to do it. But that's really the difference in the opinions of Rishonim, of how far do we carry this, meaning that how much is it very directed towards the issues that Chazal raised and the Rishonim, that or like Rashi raises here, or it has broader context or broader meaning. Right, next thing is Demai. Demai is produce that is coming from an Amma Aretz. And we are uncertain as to whether he removed Trumot and Masrot. Now, in terms of Trumot, we know that he took off, or the assumption of the Gemara is that they took off Trumah Gdolah for a number of reasons. One is that Trumah Gdolah involves the Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shamayim, so it's serious enough that they will take it off. And number two is that Trumah has no Shi'ur. It's one of the things that has no Shi'ur, and therefore you could take off one little piece, and you're done with Trumah. So since it's so easy, and the punishment is so severe, even the Amei Aretz, we assume, take off Trumot. The only question is regards to Masrot and the Trumot that derive from Masrot, which is the Masrot that you have to take off, Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni, or Maaser Rishon, Maaser Ani. And the bigger issue is Trumat Maaser. Trumat Maaser, which has the same punishment and same severity as Trumat Gedolah, but only comes out once you've taken off the Maaser Rishon, then Trumat Maaser from the Levi goes to the Kohen. That is problematic, and that they didn't really know about or weren't so focused on. And that's really the major issue in Demai, is this issue of Trumat Maser, which has a Chiyu Mita Bidei Shemaim. And if you don't take it off, you have Tevel that includes Trumat Maser in it, and that's problematic. So here the assumption is that the Amei Aretz took off the Trumah Gdolah. The Gemara in a number of places says that the assumption is that they also took off Masrot, because Rov Amei Aretz Masrim Hein. The majority of Amei Aretz take off Maser. So since the majority of them take it off, the Chachamim were willing to be makil in certain situations and give dispensations not to take off misafek again. Our practice, and what Chazal say here, is to take off misafek. Misafek, remove the truma, you can even do the truma gdola, but you remove the maaser and the trumat maaser to ensure that there is no problem. And then you eat it. You can keep the maaser rishon because motzi mechaver ola varaya. There's a safek here. And since nobody can prove that you needed to take off maaserot here, they can't take it. So you keep the maaser rishon. The maaser sheni you redeem. And then you keep it and you eat it. Maaser ani as well. You can keep it because motzi mechaver ola varaya. So that in a real sense, there's very little in the way of monetary loss. And you and save yourself from a problem, a possible chiyuv mita b'dei shemayim. Chazal said you should take off misafek trumot ha-masrot. But the true status of this item, if we look objectively, halachically, is they took off truma gdola and rov ha-meyaretz masrin. Then if you were just going based on that, you would assume that whatever you buy is yatsa min ha-rov, paresh min ha-rov, and you wouldn't have to take off trumot ha-masrot. So we have a chumrah that we make sure not to do it because of the severity of the punishment. Whenever we take off misafek. But now, these are the dispensations. The Tanan. Machilim et aniim demai vet achsanya demai. Because of this status of demai, this safek, trumot and masrot that were taken off of the produce of the amaretz, since it's only done misafek, and ala rov, it's really okay, we allow you to give it to the aniim, to poor people. If they have poor people they need to feed, and they don't have enough to give to them, they can give them demai. Or, they give it to the achsanya, they give it to the troops. Which troops? Rashi says here, it's the Jewish troops that come to town. They're Jewish troops there. They need to be fed. And it's an obligation of the town to feed them. So therefore, they give them demai. That's one of the dispensations. Tosafot brings a machloket from the Yerushalmi that it's talking about whether it's talking about non-Jewish or Jewish troops. That you might be even able to give it to non-Jewish troops. Even though, why do you matter? Why does it matter if you give it to non-Jewish troops? They don't care about Trumot Masrot. They don't care about Tevel. The answer is you're not allowed to get Hanoah from Tevel. And you're benefiting and giving them the tevel, so you don't have to give other produce to them. So you're getting a benefit by feeding them the tevel. So in both those instances, the question of whether it's Jewish or non-Jewish troops, and again, this machloket shows up throughout Shas anytime we mention this. But again, in both these cases, the Chachamim gave dispensation because of the difficult situation. They allowed you to use demai, even though misafek you're supposed to take it off. But because the overwhelming evidence is the fact that it was taken, we say, go ahead and use it in these extreme situations. I'm Rav Huna. Tana Beit Shammai Omrim, we have a braita that says, Beit Shammai Omrim, Ein Machlim et Aniim Demai Vet Achsanya Demai. They disagree. Beit Shammai says, you cannot feed the Aniim and you cannot feed the troops. Demai. Beit Hillel Omrim, Machlim et Aniim Demai Vet Achsanya Demai. And Beit Hillel is of the opinion that you can. Why bring this down? What benefit do we have from seeing this? We know the Mishnah is that we quoted says that the law is you can give them Demai, and that's the opinion of Beit Hillel. Why does it matter what Beit Shammai says? Why would you bring a braita to show us the position of Beit Shammai? So Gemara in other places says that, and it says, why are you telling me about Beit Shammai when it's not halacha? What benefit do I have? Well, here, the Gemara doesn't say that, and Tosafot points out, because if you find someone is of this opinion, the Gemara wants you to know whose opinion it is. If you find someone, or a Tana, who disagrees, and says that you can't feed them demai, know that she's got Beit Shammai, and you don't have to worry about it. What the Gemara is coming to show you here is that if you see a difference in opinion from Beit Hillel, that opinion was authored by Beit Shammai, and Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, Loch Beit Hillel, and you don't have to be choshesh for that other Tana. So we find other opinions that match this opinion of Beit Shammai, now you know who's the author of that position, and you don't have to worry about it. We don't have to be choshesh for that alternative position. Umele Arev. They are also not obligated to put out an Eruv. David, this is what you were asking before. Amei Debrei I Loshon Wale Eruvei Chatzerot. The only thing they're exempted from is an Eruv Chatzerot, which is the ability to carry in the camp. For tchumim, you are chayav. They're not allowed to go outside the tchum, and if they want to move out of the tchum, they have to put down an eruv. Obviously, here we're talking about where there's no danger. Obviously, if there's danger to life, then they can go wherever they need to go. That's not the question. The question here is when they're not, when they're just encamping there, and they need to have the encampment, or they want to move outside the encampment, the question is, in normal circumstances, can they do that? So they will need an eruv tchumim in that case. The Tani Rabbi Chia, Lokin al Eruvei Tuchumin Dvar Torah. There is Malkot on someone who violates Eruv Tuchumim Mina Torah. Meaning that Eruv Tuchumim is a din de oraita and not a din de rabbanan. Eruv Chatzerot, as we know, we've seen throughout this Masechta Zohar, Eruv Chatzerot are a din de rabbanan. It's an institution de rabbanan. Question by Eruv Tuchumin, is that an institution de rabbanan or de oraita? Here the Gemara concludes that it is an institution De'oraita, and you would get malkot on it. That's how much of a de'oraita is. Matkifla Rabbi Yonatan. Rabbi Yonatan asks him, Michilokim, alav sheba'al? Do you really get malkot when a lav is formulated with the word al? Because where do we know that a tchumim are de'oraita? from the pasuk that is found by the Mishkan, when the people are coming to donate to the Mishkan, over there we have a pasuk that says, Al yitzei ish mimkomo b'yom ha-shabbat, that a person may not leave their place on the day of Shabbat. So it's formulated, the Isser is formulated as an al, and not as a lo. So Yonatan queries and says, how come you're getting malkot on al? I thought malkot only come from a lota, say that it's formulated as lo, as do not. So now, the Gemara says, Matkiv Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Elo me'ato dichtiv, al tifnu el havot ve'elo yidonim. And in Parshat Kedoshim, when it says you're not allowed to go and follow the Ovot and the Yidonim, the soothsayers and the necromancers, you're not allowed to go and follow them or to subscribe to their works or their positions. So they're Achanami Dolo Loki. There you can say they don't get Malkot. We know they for sure get Malkot when you do this. I mean, there's a Chiyuv Karet associated with it as well, but every Chiyuv Karet also has a Lav or a Malkot associated with it. And here you get a Malkot, even though it says Al. So use the words. The word Al is not a problem in terms of Malkot. Al and Lo are interchangeable, and it's a Lav, and you will get Malkot. So what's your question? Rav says, no, Rav Yonatan Achi Kakashale. This is his question. Lav, Shnitan, Nazarat, Mitat, Beitin. This is a Lav that's going to end up in a death penalty. Lav, Shnitan, Nazarat, Mitat, Beitin, only get a Lav. And any Lav that's going to end up with a death penalty, you don't get Malkot for it. How does this Lav end up in a death penalty? So Rashi explains, and the way Rashi reads the Gemara is, Rav Yonatan's querying and saying, well, don't we learn out of Al Yitzei Ish Mimkamo? We also learn out, not only that Eruv Tchumin, that you need to be within a certain Tchum on Shabbat, but the Gemara also darshins Al Yotzei Ish Mimkamo. First, you may not take objects out of their place on Shabbat. Not allowed to carry. This is the Azara for Hotza'ah on Shabbat. The one that is not allowed to carry from place to place, from Shudar Abim to Yishud Yachid, from Shudar Yachid to Shudar Abim on Shabbat. So if this is the azhara for carrying on Shabbat, if one does carry on Shabbat, what's the punishment for carrying on Shabbat? That's a chiyuv mito. If you have a lav, shnitan, azharat, mitat, beitin, that disqualifies that lav from giving malkot. So how can you give malkot for tchumin here from this pasuk? This pasuk is utilized as the azhara for hotza'ah on Shabbat. And that ends up in an azharat, mitat, beitin. Amar Ravashi, mikhtiv ayotzi. That's not what the pasuk says. Pasuk doesn't say ayotzi, but rather it says ayetzei k'tiv. Ayetzei refers to leaving the place, the person themselves leaving the place, not carrying some other object out of the place. So the way Rashi reads the Gemara is that the havamina of the Gemara is that ayetzei is the source for carrying on Shabbat, and Ravashi's answer is that's not the case. Ayetzei is ayetzei, not ayotzi. And therefore, it's not a lav shnitan asirat meitad beitin, and you can get malkot for it. That's the way Rashi reads it. You see, there's a large Tosafot here, and he takes issue with Rashi, because he says throughout Shas, the Gemara has two assumptions. One assumption is that Ayetzei Ish Mimkamo is a source d'oraita for Tchumin. That's number one. And number two is that it's also a source for Hotzah. Ayotzei Ish Mimkamo. That drasha is used throughout Shas to tell you that there's an Azara for Hotzah. So how could Rashi suggest that the Gemara's Havamina is that it is an Azara for Hotzah? And the Gemara says, oh, no, it's not for Hotzah. But it says throughout Shas, the Gemara thinks it is a lav for Hotzah. So how can you all of a sudden hear it's dismissing it? So that's the question that Tosafot poses. So therefore, Tosafot says that everybody agrees that Al Yitzei is both an Easter for Tchumin, and Al Yotzei is also an Easter for Hotzah. And it functions as both. Rabbi Yonatan and Ravashi both agree to that. Well, then what's the question? If everybody agrees to that, then what's the answer? What's the difference between them? So Rabbi Yonatan comes and says, well, if it's a lav, shnitan, lasaret, mitat, beitin, you can't get malkot on it. And that Rashi says here as well, that even though it's a lav, shnitan, lasaret, mitat, beitin, and in this case, it won't manifest itself in a death penalty, for instance, tchumin, which will never manifest themselves in a death penalty, or you warned him that you're going to get malkot and not the death penalty, you still don't get malkot. Because the lav is a lav shnitan azarat mitin, it poter you from malkot. And that's what Rabbi Yonatan says. Rabbi Yonatan says, I have a lav shnitan azarat mitat beitin, and therefore you shouldn't get malkot, even by tchumin. Rav Ashi's answer is, wait a minute. Their pasuk is formulated as al yitzei, not as al yotzi. And by doing that, what Rav Ashi is saying is that the ikar drusha of the pasuk is al yitzei ish mimkomo. That's the primary purpose of the pasuk, And that is the primary lav that's associated here. The drusha of Ayotzi is exactly that. It's a drusha. And since the drusha is a secondary view or secondary understanding of the pasuk, therefore the malkot will still stay by the tkumin. Since that's not the real lav. The real lav is not a lav shnitan l'asarit mitivetin. It's about tchumin. And that's where you're going to get malkot. The netana, asarit mitivetin, is like a sideshow to the lav, and that's because of the way that it is formulated. And so because of that, Rav Ashi responds to Rav Yonatan, you're right. But this case happens to be a little different. This case is different because of the nature of the formulation of the lav, which makes it more to be al-yetzei rather than al-yotzi. Although Tosfot does say, interestingly enough, that he thinks that Pashtei Dekra is about Ayotzi. That we're talking about the Melachat HaMishkan, and the people shouldn't take their Kelim with them out of their place. And he thinks that even the Pshat of the Pasuk is that you shouldn't carry on Shabbat, even though Rav Ashi over here seems to distinguish between them and say the primary Pasuk is talking about Tchumin and not carrying. Alright, now we'll just quickly do the Mishnah to get started with the second Perek. No, we learn multiple items. You can only learn one chiddush from an extraneous word. But you can have multiple drashot out of a pasuk. That you can have. Or it can be a lav, which is called lav shebichlalot. A lav that provides an azara for multiple items. For instance, lo tochlu al adam has multiple meanings in drashot, and all of them are considered to be right interpretations of the pasuk. Alright, osim pasim lebirot. You can make these pasim for birot. This is already, we bumped into it a couple of times, once in Shabbat, we bumped it into here in Erevin as well. So that you can make these special boards around the cisterns that were in the public area. They were put in place for the Olei Regalim to allow them to get water. And when they were coming up, or travelers to get water in those areas. So the problem is that the cistern and the boar is a Reshut HaYachid. The area around it is a Reshut HaRabim. That's the case. They can't draw water for their animals. So they allowed you to put around these pasim around it in order to make it into a reshut yachid and to draw the water. So what do? Arba duyumdin. You put up four corners, basically. The word duyumdin is a Greek word, which is what dio comes from duo, meaning two. And medin is two sides. So when you have, it's an area where you put up a board that are perpendicular to each other. You take two boards that are perpendicular, and they intersect, you put them together at the corner, and they create two walls at that corner. So that's what diumdin are. So you put up four of these diumdin, one in each corner, each one of them facing in two directions. So that's why it's called diumdin. Nirin kishmona. And therefore they look like eight. They're four corners, but they look like eight walls, because each corner really has walls facing two directions. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Omer shmona, nirim kishne masar. It's really eight that look like 12. Arba duyumdim. He agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that you put the four corners facing in two directions. Varba'at shutim. But between each one of the duyumdim, you put up a flat board in the middle. To fill in the middle space, you put in a board. The Gemara will discuss when, why, where you have to put in this middle board. But according to him, you have the four corners, which become eight, and the boards that you insert between the corners, which are an additional four, and that is 12. So that's how Rabbi Meir gets it. Govana sarat fachim. They have to be 10 tfachim high. To be a real mechitza, you have to be 10 tfachim high. V'rochban shisha. And there are 6 tfachim in width, which is an amah. They're an amah in width, so the corners are an amah in each direction when you put them together, when you put them adjacent to each other. V'ovyan koshu. Their thickness is any amount. U'b'mneihem. How much space can you leave between them? So k'mlo shtei rivakot. It is the amount of space for 2 yokes worth of oxen. Shalosh, shalosh, bakar. Each one with 3 together. So that's a total of 6 bakar that can go through that area. And we saw before that it equals 10 amot. 1 2/3 amot for each bakar. And that would equal up to 10 amot of empty space, according to Rabbi Meir. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Udomer, arbak shirot. It's out of 4 oxen together. Not 3 oxen together, but rather 4 oxen together. That are tied, v'lo mutarot, not separate. So that's a chumrah, because they're tightly packed, not open up. And the Gemara will ask, shurot, isn't shurot mean lo mutarot? If they're tied, they're obviously not untied. Achat nichneset v'achat yotzeit. One going in and one exiting. So now that would equal 13 1/3 amot. Again, 1 2/3 times 8, and that'll get you to 13 1/3. That's the amount of space the Rabbi Yehuda allows. Mutar lakriv de be'er. You're allowed to bring these diumdim as close as you want to the well. As long as you can fit the oxen, the cow, its head, majority of his body, inside of the pasim. That way we're not afraid the person drawing the water and taking it out. We want them to stay within the yom din. If there's enough space for the animal there, then we're fine. Vishota, it can do it inside and drink. Mutar lecharchi, kosho, you can distance the yom din as far away as you want. Vashu ver pasim. As long as you fill in with extra boards to never allow a space greater than, according to Rabbi Meir, 10 amot, or according to Rabbi Yehuda, 13 and a third amot. Vidomer ad beit zatayim. So only the maximum amount of space that you can enclose with these pasim is a beit zatayim. Amrulo, lo amru beit zatayim, elo legina lo kapaf. Beit zatayim is only a relevant measure when you're dealing with areas that are not enclosed for dira. They're not enclosed for living spaces. For instance, a gina, a garden here, meaning a vegetable garden, a planted garden, or a karpaf. As Rashi says, ene kefan le dira, they're not enclosed for living space. Karpaf, what's a karpaf? Hekef gadol, chutz leir. It's an enclosure outside the city. Lachnis sham etzim lotzar. It's to put in, it's a storage area outside the city that is enclosed. That's a karpaf. And a gina is an enclosure in the city. But again, not enclosed for a living space, but for other utility. Aval imaya deer, if it was a deer which is a corral, o sohar, or in the Mishnah sohar, or, you know, sohar, not a jail here, but another type of corral, but they're in a different locations. You have the sohar is for the domesticated animals. That's what it's a corral for. A deer is a makeshift corral that they put in the fields, and they used to put them in the fields in different locations to fertilize the fields. They'd move around the corral within the field so that the animals would live there for a certain amount of time. They would leave their fertilizer there, their dung there, and then they move the corral over, and that's the way they fertilize the field. So that's a deer. It's like a makeshift corral that's used to fertilize the field. A sohar is a more permanent corral, but it's used for the domesticated animals. O mukse. Mukse, Rashi here says, is rechava shachorei abatim. It's the backyards. But the rechava that we saw before, something where they didn't utilize it heavily, the chatzer, the courtyards used much more heavily, that's the next thing in the Mishnah or chatzer. Afilu beit chameshit korim. You can surround as much as you want, because that's hukaf lidira. That's hukaf for living space. Afilu beit asra korim, even up to 10 kor. As much as you want to surround, you can surround, because that's a living space. Living spaces can be as big as you wish. So therefore, even up to beit asra korim is mutar. Now, what about here? So what does that have to do with our Pasei Biriot? Shirashi says, because Pasei Biriot, since the water, even though most people are using it to feed their animals, it's potable water. It's potable water, that's a basic necessity of life, a basic need of life, and therefore it becomes hukaf ledira. It's equivalent of hukaf ledira, because water is a basic need, a basic necessity, and that's as if it's hukaf ledira, and therefore you should have unlimited amount of space that you can surround it. That's why they're arguing on Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore, mutar lachi koshu b'vay shibeh b'pasim. Again, you can expand it as far as you want. The only thing you have to be makpid on is that you don't have gappings of more than 10 amot or more than 13 and a third amot. The only thing to note here is that Tosafot asks, here we're talking about Rishut Rabim and Rishut Yachid. Those are both problems de oraita. Now, you're trying to solve the problem by being makil and putting up these diumdim, putting up these corners. Now, that is an institution de Rabbanan. Question is, how can you deal with an issue de oraita with an institution de Rabbanan? And number two is, an institution de Rabbanan that's not a real mechitza. Everybody agrees this is, you have parutz, you have teral ha'omeid. You have more open space than standing space. So how is it possible that these basei biriot solve a de oraita problem? So the Rishonim have different ways to deal with it. Tosafot over here says, and he says in different ways, he says, number one, maybe parutz, your teral ha'omeid is only a din de Rabbanan. That means de oraita, you don't need that. And therefore, we're only dealing with an issue de Rabbanan, parutz al homeid. That's one issue that he deals with. In addition to that, he says also about ati avir the high gisa of high gisa. We had the principle that if the airspace on both sides is greater than the board, it eliminates the board in between. Why don't we say that here? So again, here you can argue that again, that it's only a din de Rabbanan, that avira is, wipes out that which is in between. And here they suspended that din de Rabbanan. The other possibility is that diyum din are different. When you have a wall that's at a corner and it has a perpendicular setup, that the airspace can't be mevatel. When it's a straight wall, then you can say if the airspace on both sides is greater, then it's mevatel it. But when you have something that's a corner that's much more structural and defined, a mechitza, maybe there it would not wipe it out. But that's what the Rishonim are trying to deal with over here. Either you have to come up with a dispensation that says this doesn't apply d'oraita because it's different than the normal case? Or you're going to have to say that these things are only issues the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan gave a dispensation in this case. Because otherwise, you're dealing with the din d'oraita, you can't just say, oh, we're going to be makel over here, because that won't solve the problem. Okay, we'll stop over here.